If you're one of nearly 70% of Americans, you have a pet at home. And what's the number one pet of choice? A dog. While sheltering in place, it's likely your pet has become your full-time roommate, family member, and coworker as you go about your day. And if I were a dog right now, I'd want to know Dustin McAdams. He's the CEO of Pupjoy, a personalized dog care subscription service. Pupjoy is cutting through the clutter of a crowded pet care industry. In the 5 years since Pupjoy's inception, the company has been recognized with industry awards and various write-ups in the news for their stellar customer service and offerings. That's because Dustin takes his audience, pet parents, really seriously, and is thinking about all the different types of dog owners and the products they need delivered right to their door. While Pupjoy's experience may be specific to the dog care industry, the way he thinks about e-commerce can have application for any number of online businesses. This episode on e-commerce and thriving in the subscription box space starts right now. How did you embark on the path of starting Pupjoy?
I was a consumer of a number of subscription or kind of early days of subscription type of services. Clothes from Trunk Club, food from Blue Apron, so on and so forth. I was also an early customer of BarkBox, which was really the first subscription offering for dog parents. And my experience with using a variety of those services was a little bit of a light bulb. I felt there may be an opportunity for a better personalized model in pet. What BarkBox does, which kudos to them, they've had huge success, is very much a thematic model, not so much a personalized model. And for my two dogs in particular, they have unique needs with both of them, both across food and toys. And a lot of the stuff we would receive just didn't work. So we were donating quite a bit of it. It got me looking into the space, and we felt there was a lot of green space for a more personalized home delivery model in pet.
Something you said earlier, Dustin, was how you had your own personal experiences subscribing to many different subscription boxes. I think you mentioned Trunk Club, mm-hmm. Wink, other ones like I could think of are like Dollar Shave Club, Rent the Runway, I believe falls into that category as well. Why do you think so many businesses have gone down the subscription box route path?
I would say first and foremost, it's driven by what customers want. And when you put the label subscription on things, it certainly can take a lot of shapes and forms. But subscriptions in terms of delivering something on a repeatable continuity basis, it's being driven by customer demand. More and more, we all are striving for more convenience in our lives. And subscription models serve that well. I would say the secondary thing for the attraction to businesses, both small and large, is the subscription relationship provides a lot of predictability, predictable revenue, predictable metrics in operating the business. So I think as larger brands have seen success with some emerging brands and being direct to consumer with a subscription model, you see more and more M&A activity happening and more larger companies and brands getting into the space.
Yeah, it's an interesting point where even big box retailers or like you mentioned, like direct to consumer brands, if they weren't originally in the subscription space, now they've gone ahead and if not going exclusively down that road, they're at least adding it to like the one of the ways in which they're supplying products to their consumer. A follow-up question for you. How would you describe who the Pupjoy consumer or audience is?
The Pupjoy consumer is typically someone who treats their dog as part of their family. I think we had an expectation that we would be serving much more of an urban demographic. And what we found is our customers come in all shapes and sizes and walks and geographies. It's someone who kind of views themselves through the lens of a pet parent versus a pet owner. Really, their buying behaviors for their four-legged family member mirror their own quite a bit. And that's who we serve.
How would you qualify that for somebody who isn't an actual pet parent? Because there are going to be folks listening who might be like me, they don't actually have a pet. And really understanding the separation between pet parent versus pet owner might be a nuance worth sharing.
So it's a nuance, maybe a good way to put it. It's a blurred line. It can become labels that become argued by people. There are major trends that have happened in the space that, and there's lots of objective data behind this, that show that people more and more are treating their pets, especially dogs, as members of the family instead of something that's kind of outside of that. So I think, you know, that has driven terms like pet parent or the humanization of pet. But at the end of the day, it really is more and more people are just, they have the mindset of it's part of my family. The way I care for them, the way I buy from them, much more mirrors the way you might purchase for a child or for yourself, depending on the context of your household.
What would be the behaviors that they would be regularly doing in their home for their pet, specifically their dog, that really illustrates that their pet slash dog is part of their family?
Yeah, that's a good question. So more and more what you see, the percentage of families who do things like buy their dogs birthday gifts or holiday gifts or allow them to sleep in the bed. At a little more of a substantial level, what that means is the buying behaviors are, we're looking for more transparency and product quality. We're looking for more socially responsible brands that we patronize. It very much is in step with a lot of the trends on some of the things that we buy for ourselves as humans. There are labels like LOHAS, which is kind of a big category for the way people are influenced by healthy lifestyles and sustainability. And there's a macro trend in that and the way we as humans buy and consume things. And as we look at our pets, and especially our dogs, as an extension of our family, a lot of the same motivators go into the types of products and services that we look for them.
That makes a lot of sense. And it just illustrates the fact that there's just that deeper level of care and consideration for your pet or dog in a way that, like, historically, I think pet owners haven't done. To touch on another topic, we lightly explored this at the top, just thinking about the marketplace and who all is out there. Obviously, since the inception of PupJoy, like leading up to now, there's probably many more dog care subscription competitors in the space. So what does that marketplace look like? What are you doing to just make sure that PupJoy is standing out and away from the competitive landscape?
What we see in pet is there are a lot of them that look a lot like BarkBox, which is a model that generally is kind of anchored around themes. We've always taken a different path. Part of it was we started out with a vision that wasn't what we were going to be as a company, but part of it is BarkBox is a company that's done that very well. And we weren't trying to follow a leader in what they do. We were kind of jumping into the same space, but trying to take a different path. When we launched, and generally still the way we look at the space that we operate in, felt that there's a lot of opportunity for a more personalized, trusted online shopping. There's major movement that has happened over the last 5 years and is forecasted over the next 5 years in terms of people's buying behaviors generally shifting out of bricks and mortar retail to online, or at least some combination of the two. They want to be able to order things on their own schedule, conveniently personalized, and have them delivered. Through our progression, we were the first subscription box that allowed customers to, the first pet subscription that allowed customers to customize their products. And we were the first that offered an absolute 100% satisfaction guarantee. So we kind of started off day one with, this is the path we're going to take. We are going to be all in when it comes to customer service and the lifetime of the relationship with them. And we certainly didn't know everything. There was, you know, learning as we go, but we knew we wanted to be a much more personalized model. We were also the first company in our space to create custom programs for commercial clients. Many of ours have been hotels and property management companies. The other thing we've always done is we've worked from day one directly with indie suppliers. And that means we don't have a model where we go to distributors, which has made kind of the path of developing a robust product network a little tougher, but there's a lot of value in getting there. So we've got strong relationships with a lot of suppliers. We're able to deliver affordable access of really good products to our customers. And at the stage we're in now, we've got some really good partnerships with some of those supplier brands where we're co-developing product. We've kind of, in the last 6 months, turned a little bit of a corner in our evolution. We made a decision a while ago to go build our own technology. We were at a point trying to figure out how do we get to the next step of where we want to go in terms of a personalized online experience. And I think we explored just about every commercial platform out there. And we found enough limitations in all of them and where we wanted to go that we just made the decision we're going to build our own technology stack. So we raised some money, we spent some time building technology, and now we're rolling all of that out to the marketplace. And that allows us to put a model out there that really combines what people love around curated subscription models that are generally around discovery and variety of items that match their needs, and combining what people love around auto shipment deliveries, which typically translates to products that people want over and over in the pet space. That tends to be like dog food, supplements. And we're able to combine those into one model, save the customers money, and have singular shipments that also have a better environmental footprint.
I wanted to touch on a couple of the things you mentioned, because I feel like you took the question very seriously, Dustin, and you really spoke through all the different qualities that PubJoy brings to the table. No, that's great. So one of the things that you mentioned was the indie relationships with indie suppliers. And then you subsequently mentioned the tech stack and how you went about building a proprietary one, or one that's independently utilized by you all. It seems like they very much are intermingled, right? Like the complexity that having independent suppliers puts upon you, it's got to be taxing. And that probably is what required you, one of the many things that might have required you to go about building something custom for yourselves. Is that how the trajectory kind of aligned?
We made the decision early days that we wanted a model that worked directly with independent brands. And that allowed us to develop relationships with brands that fit in the model of what we wanted to carry, which tend to be really high quality, healthy stuff. And we always look for brands that have some sort of social benefit, whether that's through their sustainability practices, charitable efforts, but we try to find really kind of a network effect of the best of the best in the industry, companies that are doing the right things and making really good products. It is more complex at times. I would say the counter to that is it's allowed us to develop really strong relationships with them. We're not going through distributors to buy their products. We work directly with them. So that's translated over time to us getting to know them and have a trusting relationship with them, but also in a lot of cases get into relationships where we're co-developing some unique stuff, which is certainly to our benefit. On the technology side of things, building our own technology really had a lot to, I would say it had more to do with the personalized experience that we wanted to provide to customers and what was the best path technically, both today and where we want to go tomorrow to do that.
How do you pass along that benefit to the consumer? Because obviously there are things on the back end that the end user or the subscriber doesn't see, but how does it show up in when they log into your website or however it is that they're interacting with PubJoy?
Two big benefits that, and you're right, customers don't see a lot at the back end, but two big benefits they see is if you log into PubJoy today and you're a first-time customer and you want any kind of subscription delivery, the first thing we do is allow you to profile your dog or dogs, plural, in the house. We provide the type of profiling information that surpasses anything out there. So what that allows us to do is to really get to know your dogs individually and make intelligent product recommendations based on their unique needs. So that's kind of the first big thing. There's a lot of fun in the middle in terms of how customers are able to personalize their deliveries. But on the back end, the big benefit they see is we provide access to premium high quality products at a cost that is often far better than other avenues where customers can get them. We are, with the type of products that we carry, it often is a much better value than retail.
More holistically, where have you seen curated products go wrong or just subscription services go wrong in general that you know you want PubJoy to avoid and that PubJoy maybe has always avoided?
I would say brands that have tried to sacrifice quality for cost, that can certainly be a mistake. And I can understand sometimes there may be attraction in the moment of things like closeouts or samples that economically, you know, in an acute window make a lot of sense, but for a customer experience don't. So I think that can be a risk. I would say if you're in the world of curating subscriptions, choosing products that customers either don't want or like can be problematic. If you're in a space, especially any space that has a lot of competition, and you don't have a product or service that distinguishes itself well, you're not building much of a competitive moat, and you're not giving your customers a lot of reasons not to sample out other services. If you look like everyone else, then it's going to be natural for customers to hop around and try different services. So I think all of those can be, I don't know if it's necessarily where brands go wrong, but can be kind of inherent risks if you're in our space. I would say the fourth one is, this extends beyond just subscription, but I believe you have to do customer servicing, not just well, but exceptionally well, to develop long-standing relationships with your customers.
And it sounds like you guys take customer service wildly seriously. I know you mentioned you guys have like 100% satisfaction guarantee. Can you just clarify what that all entails as far as how the customer can expect a relationship with PupJoy?
Yeah. Yes, we do take that one very seriously. And I think it starts, at least in our world, it starts at the top with the founders and how we launched the business in the priority we put on servicing customers. So you have to care first and foremost, and we do. And that's led to the type of policies we put in place, what we prioritize with employees when they're talking to customers. You know, for us, from a policy standpoint, it really was day one of we're going to have 100% satisfaction guarantee without caveats, without any gotchas, without contract commitments that we tie customers into, because we're really in the business of earning our customers' trust in their business with everything we ship them. If we miss the mark on something, and you know, we're a fairly complicated, personalized operation, and mistakes can happen, even though we're really good at it, we'll miss once in a while. We'll send somebody the wrong thing or we'll miss something. We always make it right. And it extends even to customers have dogs that are picky sometimes, and they think their dog might like something and they don't. We take care of it. So our belief in that is, as an online brand and a brand that wants to develop long-standing customer relationships with high lifetime value for us, it is far more important to treat them the way you would your friend or your neighbor. If they don't like something, and especially if we've made a mistake, just make it right at all cost. The value is in the long-term relationship. And frankly, some of our biggest advocates over the years have been customers where we tripped up or they just had a picky dog and weren't satisfied and we took care of them. And then they go tell all their friends about it, which is great.
I want to ask you about something you mentioned a little bit earlier, or at least you alluded to it, the fact that there's pretty much two main subscription model types, one of them being replenishment, the other one being maybe more discovery oriented. I wanted to get a sense of where do you see overall, not just specific to PupJoy, but just across industries, do you think we're evolving into a space where there's more focus on one category versus the other? Because at least my philosophy is that when there was the advent of the subscription box, at least from my perspective, like once it became a part of popular culture was probably like 7 or 8 years ago, or it's really maybe a decade. And at that time, it was very much focused on discovery, surprise, and delight. And now I feel like it's more replenishment focused. Do you feel like people are fatigued from discovery, or do you think that there's still a lot of hunger for that out in the market?
So I have lots of energy around this space. It's been a big topic in our strategic planning. I'll answer your last question first. So I think the data shows that there's not fatigue with subscription. It's kind of a broad category. It's actually gaining traction, gaining growth, and consumer adoption. I do think when you look at subscription through the lens of some of the early subscription boxes that were much more focused on sampling type of discovery, there is fatigue on that. I think it's, you know, the subscription industry has gone through growth phases, and that was one of the early ones. And it was a lot of times driven by things like cosmetics that have really, really high margins on them. So companies could acquire for zero or very little cost sampling type of products, and in turn, deliver that to the customer from a discovery model. So I do think there's fatigue on that. Pulling back a little bit, there's been a lot of study on why do people adopt subscription models? Kind of what are the value drivers? So they fall into three big categories. The first is discovery, which can be sampling or it can just be discovering new products. The second is access, which tends to be access to things I can't get elsewhere or access to special pricing that I can't get elsewhere. And the third is really savings, which is what you alluded to with an auto ship model. Purely by the numbers, the biggest driver in the marketplace right now is on auto ship or auto replenishment models. But those are kind of the big value drivers. And for us, we spend a lot of time studying this and what is working well across different industries, kind of hitting on these three facets of value drivers for customers, and how can we combine them all into one model? So that is what we set out to do. That's what I believe we have done with kind of the 2.0 phase of PupJoy.
So I will evolve our conversation into something that falls maybe more into territory I'm familiar with, and that is advertising. And so just curious, you know, obviously you guys have been in business for 5 years, but it is a massive pool of a pet care industry out there. So how are you guys getting your name out there with advertising behind it?
Where we've been and even at our stage today, which is, I would still very much consider as a startup, that is a challenging part of being a company that doesn't play in a niche space. And I would treat what we do for dog owners, which that's 60-some% of households in the US, is not a niche space. Being able to be effective in getting awareness and getting the message out there is important. We don't have the budgets to do national broadcast campaigns like TV, even national radio. So we've had to be scrappy and reliant and, you know, kind of a portfolio approach to what we do across the digital space, which for us is, it ranges from everything from organic social, paid social, the way we tap into influencers and ambassadors across channels, search marketing, display marketing, and really doing everything we can from a word of mouth and customer referral standpoint to help amplify our message. Along the way, we've also had the benefit of, we've gotten a couple awards and we've gotten some recognition in some press and articles, which that's always certainly welcomed. But I would say as a strategy, it is much more around how we leverage the digital advertising space to make sure that we can acquire customers within an appropriate cost of acquisition.
What do you prioritize in your creative messaging in your ads?
To be honest, that is somewhat evolved over the years. I would say as we sit today, we're rolling out a lot of industry first features and functionality. So that's going to be a core of trying to get that message out. Really what we're aiming at is taking the type of experience that people love about local boutique retail, which tends to be the owner or the employee knows me, or in the case of pet products, knows my dog, and they can make good recommendations to me because they know me, and I trust in the type of quality that they carry. So we're trying to take that, what people love about that type of experience, and translate that to an online experience. So that informs the way we speak and the way we advertise, which for us, we're servicing dogs and their parents. So it's those tend to be fun, happy, sometimes really funny relationships. So we try to stay fairly light in our advertising, and we try to, you know, it tends to be upbeat. We don't take ourselves too seriously in advertising messages. And at the same time, we try to make sure we're staying really authentic. I would say that the challenge for us, outside of just budgets and scale and everything, is our value proposition is a little more complicated and complex. We think it's a really, really strong value proposition, but it is a little more challenging to communicate in the small bits and pieces that need to happen in digital marketing.
So I think a good follow-up question there, given how it can be tough in a small, like the small footprint that is, let's say, a display advertisement or a search ad, to really communicate the full value prop that PopJoy brings to the table. So how much have you guys explored the video space and bringing video to your advertisement?
We've used it for a while. It is becoming an increasing priority for what we do in any of our native advertising, and even in what we do with kind of influencer ambassadors. And I, you know, for us, I would chalk that up to two major things. One is it works. It resonates often with consumers. And secondly, we happen to be in a very visual space. People love seeing cute dogs, and cute dogs in videos are sometimes even better than cute dogs in pictures. So videos, when done well, and sometimes done well, is not real polish. Sometimes it's great user generated content that's just authentic and cute. But video, when done well, we found works well for us.
I want to ask a little bit more about like content for PupJoy. Like, what are the shapes that those like different things you just described, like where do they exist? Like, are we talking about blogs on your website? What does this content look like and where is it?
So yeah, our blog world is actually, we're in the middle of a shift on it. We're starting to publish some stuff on Medium. So one of the things we're trying to figure out right now from a content perspective is, do we go all in with Medium, or do we go back to what we've done before, which is a blog that we own and control, or does it become a hybrid of both, where we publish content on our own blog, but then at least take a subset of that and have it distributed through Medium as well?
So I'm going to ask you one or two more questions, and one of them more focused on not you as the CEO of PupJoy, but you as a person who is a dog parent. Like, mm-hmm. How has your having dogs as part of your family informed your ability to better drive the future of where PupJoy goes?
I certainly think I am better. And employees of PupJoy are better when they're dog lovers and dog parents themselves. I think it's you have context for all the people we're servicing. That said, PupJoy wasn't necessarily a passion project. Before doing PupJoy, I used to donate some of my time to the rescue world. I've got a couple of rescue dogs. It's an area of interest for me. But we also started this as a business because we thought the business had a lot of opportunity. And I think, like any business, as you're building out a culture and employees in that culture, you want people that have genuine passion and interest around what you do. So for us, that is, we're dog owners ourselves, and we look for the type of people to bring on board on the team that kind of fit the same bill.
What I'm hearing from you is that there aren't two lenses with which you approach the business. It isn't like Dustin, the CEO, and Dustin, the dog parent. It's you're always both. And that's an expectation for being able to like better serve your customer base.
I think that's actually a great question, a great way to put that. So when I look at myself pre-PupJoy days, when I was a corporate employee, there was much more separation between me, the employee, and what I do with that time, and me, the individual outside of work. For me, running a business and being an entrepreneur, I love it. I don't think it's a fit for everybody, but I love it. I think part of loving doing that is there isn't much separation. I've got a lot more autonomy over what I do, but when I need to be on, I'm always on. We're still a small business, and you know, sometimes that's 11 or 12 at night. But I think it's much more than time. It's a mentality. Like, it's hard for me to separate myself from PupJoy because it very much is, it's something that my partner and I, we envisioned, we brought to life, and we live and breathe it every day. That's not for everybody, but for people like me that love doing it, it's a huge motivator. When I look for the type of employees that we would want to bring aboard, that is a facet. We look for, certainly it's the person first and foremost, even before skill set. You know, as a small business that is scaling, we want to attract the type of people that are the right fit for, what we want to do with a culture, and that we believe have the adaptability to continue to grow and evolve as we do.
I want to ask you one or two more advertising questions.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you guys do display, social, native advertising, and then you have a lot of content that you can use to source, some of those ads. Is there anything in the advertising space besides national TV, which obviously would be appealing? Is there anything new that you would like to bring into like the reservoir of things that you would just like to launch a campaign with?
Yeah, so there are a couple things that are immediately of interest. One is an event-based strategy, and we were literally just about to kick it off before all things COVID hit. And we will certainly come back to it when the timing is right. But our approach on that is, without giving too much of it away, because I actually think it's going to be really cool when we roll it out, but we want to test in Chicago first. We were based in Chicago. It is a major metro environment. It's a great testing ground for things that we can do that are engaging at a local event level that if done really well, that we think we could scale out to other markets. So that's one. And it was one of the, I think, toughest pills to swallow with all things, quarantine and lockdown, is knowing that we're going to have to shelf that idea for a while. But we will get there as soon as the timing's right. The other is we are, all shifting to consuming much more streaming content. And I think there are a lot of advertising opportunities in streaming content. And it's an area where we haven't played yet, but it's one I have a lot of energy around getting into.
If you ever want to talk about connected television and the opportunities around there, I have a lot of those conversations at Centro. So just...
I would actually welcome that.
We should do that. One more question on my end. You just alluded to it a moment ago. We're in this like post-COVID world. It's obviously impacting businesses differently, whether they're exclusively brick and mortar or they're focused in the e-commerce space like you guys are. What do you think is really important to communicate to existing customers during this COVID age? And what's important to communicate to prospective customers in the COVID age?
You know, so I will say, I'll readily admit, we're fortunate to be on the online side of this all, because I've got a lot of connections and friends that are on the retail side, and I know it is really, really tough. So, you know, everything I say is with respect to the struggles that that lots of people are having right now. Luckily, we fall into the essential category, so we haven't had any blip with production, shipping type of operations. So one of the first things that we did with any kind of messaging to customers was just letting them know that, hey, we're still here. As of now, everything is shipping out on a regular schedule. There's no impacts to deliveries. If anything changes, we will notify you immediately. So it was those type of, you know, transactional messages to customers to let them know the status of things. As we've kind of moved out of that, and where we are now is really leaning into messaging that taps into the value proposition of the moment and what we anticipate is going to be for at least months out on the horizon, which has a lot to do with how we can get people at least the things that their dogs need in a format that makes sense for them through this window of time where they certainly at least are much more reluctant to be out and shopping at a retail level. So, you know, for us, that's been a couple big things. One, we've had some formats of like quarantine type of boxes where larger formats, basically a month's worth of supplies. So you're able to get something where it's a little bigger format where you don't have to get out and replenish things at retail. And then as we've been rolling out our new subscription model, which is build your own delivery, a lot of that is tapping into the value proposition of how you can get exactly what you want and still get those personalized product recommendations, but get it in the convenience of a model that works for your lifestyle now, which is order whenever you want and have it delivered to your doorstep.
If you were to make an adjustment to creative messaging in some sort of digital ad format to appeal to prospective customers, what would be critical to communicate to them as far as why they may want to start a subscription with PupJoy?
So convenience and personalization are big parts of our messaging. That's not new for us. We've added on, I would say, a lot of additional capabilities and what that means, but at its core, we message around personalization and convenience. The area where we have we are evolving our messaging a bit is the way we're leaning into health and sustainability, which at the end of the day is really a message around trust. But we're trying to get out there a little more visibly. Here's what PupJoy stands for, and many facets of this has always stood for, in terms of the way we value and quite potentially mirror with your values as a customer, issues of health and sustainability.
Dustin, I have brainstormed an ad, like creative messaging for you.
Awesome. I will take it.
Okay. It could be like an influencer campaign, and it's somebody in their work from home environment. The message says like, build bonds with your coworkers, and they're giving a treat to their dog as they're working.
I love it.
It's just something to think about.
I actually love that. I think that's something we can probably run with. The whole notion of coworker through the lens of PupJoy Dogs has taken on a very different meaning over the last few months. So, and I think, you know, it's something that often gets a smile from people because they're working from a desk or their kitchen table or whatever at home. And a lot of times it's their dog that's sitting there next to them all day. So I love that.
For the future of PupJoy, whether it's within the confines of this post-COVID landscape or it's after, what are things you're excited to work on to continue to build an evolution of the PupJoy offering?
A couple of those big areas that get me excited are continuing to develop out our product portfolio, and part of that product portfolio being those type of private label products that we develop or that we co-develop that become unique offerings. We're actually working with a couple companies here in Chicago. One is, I would say, arguably the foremost leather tannery manufacturer in the world, the best leather leash and collar set you can get. So we have some fun things going on like that in the product space. The other thing that has been interesting as we've evolved is we went out and built this technology, which it has features and functions that just frankly surpass anything in pet subscription. And what has happened along the way is we've gotten in some really interesting conversations with other companies in leveraging that technology. So we have two active relationships right now that may translate to us taking a technology base that we've invested in and having it, being able to leverage it for partners in some other areas.
Everything you just described now, I feel like completely aligns with the vision of what it is you want to deliver to the PupJoy customer. So I think it's exciting for you as a business, and it's exciting for your existing and prospective customers. So Dustin, I really appreciate you making time to have this conversation with me today.
It's been awesome, Nora. I appreciate it.
Thanks to Dustin McAdams, CEO of PupJoy, for all the great insight into how he makes his subscription service a hit for his customers and their pets. As Dustin makes clear, diverse breeds call for diverse needs. Truly listening to and understanding your customers is essential for thriving in any marketplace, whether it's post-COVID or not. Also, a tech-forward solution is an essential component for differentiation in a crowded marketplace. Thanks for all the great tips, Dustin. Well, that's all for now. Thanks for tuning in for this episode, and we'll catch you next time for more AdTech Unfiltered.